Welcome to the deep dive. If you feel like the world of artificial intelligence is just moving so fast that you need new glasses every week to keep things in focus, well, you are definitely not alone.
The pace, something else.
Right. It requires constant catching up. And the really big story isn't just that AI is getting smarter, it's that it's fundamentally changing its whole job description.
That's exactly the core idea from this week's sources, I think.
Yeah.
We're seeing this profound transition. AI is shifting from being just a passive tool we use,
Right, something we direct.
exactly, to becoming an independent, proactive agent.
Yeah.
It acts for us. And our deep dive today, well, it traces this agency across four really key areas: biology, commerce, labor, and maybe surprisingly, even government.
So that's our mission here. We're going to take this absolute flood of recent tech headlines. I mean, everything from autonomous shopping protocols backed by, huge financial players to AI models designing totally new life forms, and we'll distill it down. Get to the essential insights.
Pinpoint what really matters for you to understand the AI landscape right now.
And why these shifts seem to be accelerating, like week by week.
Okay.
Okay, let's dive straight in. The most, frankly, breathtaking story this week is AI working right at the frontier of life itself.
Yeah.
We are way past AI just spotting cancer on an X-ray. We are now in an age where AI is like rewriting biology.
It sounds like science fiction, but it's happening.
The startling news comes from Stanford and the Arc Institute. Researchers there created the first AI-generated, entirely new
But
viruses.
what's really fascinating here is the speed and the creativity of the model they used. It's called Evo.
Evo, okay.
Yeah, it was trained on about 2 million different known viruses. So essentially, it learned the language of how viruses work,
The grammar of viruses.
kind of. And when researchers asked it to design new viruses, ones that don't exist in nature, well, 16 out of 302 attempts actually proved functional in lab tests.
16. That's significant. And these weren't just minor tweaks, right?
No, not at all. The sources say these AI viruses had 392 mutations never seen before in nature.
Wow.
And here's where it gets really impactful. In one key test, bacteria developed resistance to normal, natural viruses. But the AI-designed versions, they broke through that resistance in just days.
Days while the natural ones failed.
The natural ones failed, yeah. It shows a kind of design intelligence overcoming evolved defenses.
So connecting this to the bigger picture.
It marks a really profound shift. The Arc Institute themselves said we're moving from just reading and writing genomes to designing them,
Designing life.
designing life. And this isn't just a science thing, right? It throws up huge questions about R&D liability.
Like, who owns the patent on an AI designed virus?
Exactly. Or maybe more importantly, who's accountable if something goes wrong? Who controls it? The old lines of ownership are getting blurred at a, well, at a biological level.
That idea of proactive design, it carries right over into healthcare too, doesn't it? Into predictive risk.
It does. We saw two major advances in predictive medicine this week. Both kind of shift health management away from just reacting to illness.
Towards proactively assessing risk, yeah.
Precisely. And the scale is huge. European researchers developed this AI called Delphi-2M.
Delphi 2M.
Right. It forecasts individual disease risks across more than 1,000 conditions up to 20 years into the future.
20 years. How?
Well, it studied health data from 400,000 patients in the UK, looking for subtle patterns over decades, visits, lifestyle, to spot the absolute earliest warning signs.
That's incredible data. But forecasting health risk 20 years out, I mean, that sounds like a potential ethical nightmare, privacy
Well,
issues.
absolutely. And that's the conversation starting now. The tech is amazing. It can flag risks for early diabetes, specific cancers, things like that. But the challenge for policymakers is, okay, how do we use this data responsibly without creating like new classes of high-risk people or enabling discrimination?
Who gets to see your 20-year risk profile? Your insurer, your employer.
That's the question. The shift is profound. We're moving from asking if you have a disease to predicting when you're likely to get one.
And building on that, there was the Johns Hopkins study, AI models beating doctors at predicting surgery risks.
Yeah, deadly surgery risks. They used standard, cheap, pre-op ECG data stuff hospitals already collect
Okay.
of about 37,000 surgical patients. And the result, the AI predicted major complications, stroke, heart attack, death, within 30 days with 85% accuracy.
85%? That's staggering. Better than human doctors using the same data.
Outperformed them significantly in the study. And this has immediate benefit for you, the listener, right?
Yeah.
This isn't some far-off theory. It's pulling life-saving insights from routine tests we already do. Your risk profile becomes this quantifiable thing you can manage over decades. It changes primary care, surgical planning.
Okay, so if we're trusting AI to engineer biology and predict our health decades out, we definitely need secure ways for it to handle, say, our money.
Right. Moving from the lab to the marketplace. The independent AI agent is now stepping into commerce and labor.
And if AI is going to act for us, buy things, book travel, manage funds, it needs secure rules of the road, doesn't it? Like universally accepted ones.
That's exactly the problem. Google and more than 60 other big names, MasterCard, PayPal, Coinbase are in there too, are trying to solve.
With this agent payments protocol.
APE. Yep. AP2. It's designed as an open framework. The idea is to make that leap to mainstream autonomous shoppers, you know, financial agents, secure.
And the security layer is key here.
It is. AP2 uses this dual approval system. You, the user, have to grant two separate secure digital contracts. They call them mandates.
A mandate, okay.
First, an intent mandate.
Yeah.
That's like, okay, agent, you have permission to search for deals, negotiate prices for me.
Permission to browse?
Sort of, yeah. And then a separate cart mandate for the final irreversible purchase.
Ah, so a two-step confirmation.
Exactly. That structure is really the critical step for building consumer trust.
Mm-hmm.
Because an agent handling your money, it needs accountability, something that feels like a traditional contract.
It creates a traceable record.
An auditable trust layer, yeah. Mm. But here's the critical analysis kit.
Yeah.
Are two digital signatures really enough, given the scale of online fraud?
Good point.
This structure gives a trail for the user, sure. But maybe it doesn't create enough friction to stop, say, a malicious agent that gets compromised.
So the risk shifts from my identity being stolen to my agent's identity being stolen.
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah.
The battleground shifts. Agent identity theft could become the new thing.
Okay. Now let's pivot to what these agents can actually do. In labor, in creative work, OpenAI launched GPT-5 Codex.
Right, the specialized coding model.
And it's completely redefining how coding might work, apparently, because of something called dynamic compute effort.
Yeah, dynamic compute. That's the nuance we need to get. See, traditional models, they run at one speed, one cost.
Right.
This new Codex model, though, it can adjust its own compute power, which directly changes its cost and how well it performs.
So it can be cheap for easy stuff.
Exactly. On simple tasks, it cuts token usage. That's the computational cost by 94%.
Mm.
So fast, cheap bug fixes. But for really complex multi-step problems, it does the opposite. It can run autonomously for over 7 hours.
7 hours just working on one problem.
Dedicating twice the reasoning time of the base GPT-5 model. This is where it goes beyond just generating code snippets.
Then to actual engineering. Problem solving.
Creative, dedicated engineering. And we saw proof of that, right? At the ICPC World Finals, the big global programming contest.
What happened there?
The GPT-5 model reportedly got a perfect score. Solved all 12 complex challenges.
Yeah.
Submitted the right answer on the first try for 11 of them.
Perfect score against human competitors.
Against the problem set for the world's best human student programmers. It shows these models are hitting mastery in fields that used to be purely about specialized human genius.
And well, that level of agency. It has an immediate and pretty painful impact on the human workforce, doesn't it?
It does. Look at Fiverr, the global freelance marketplace. They just cut their workforce by 30%.
30%? That's huge.
250 employees laid off.
Yeah.
As they transition to being an AI-first company, aiming for a leaner, faster organization, they said.
Wow. A 30% cut isn't just trimming fat. That's fundamentally restructuring based on tech that's still pretty new in some ways.
And it's not just freelance platforms. It's hitting the people who train the AI, too.
How so?
We saw hundreds of contractors laid off at Google. These are the people, many with master's degrees, PhDs even, who evaluate Google's AI outputs.
The AI raters, improving Gemini AI overviews.
Exactly, improving the quality and safety. And they were laid off amid ongoing disputes about pay, about job security.
So the human labor that underpins AI is becoming precarious itself.
It highlights that precarity, yeah.
Yeah.
The people making the models better are often the first ones displaced by the efficiency the models create. It's a tough dynamic.
Okay, shifting gears again. None of this AI autonomy, designing, viruses, shopping, coding happens without specialized hardware.
Absolutely not.
And the fight to control that hardware, the geopolitical tensions, the corporate strategies, it's really heating up across like three major fronts.
Right. The first front is the interface, where you, the user, actually interact with the AI.
Like our phones now.
Sort of, but it's evolving. OpenAI is making big moves here. They're exploring developing actual physical hardware.
OpenAI making hardware? Like what?
Things like smart glasses, a wearable pen, a voice recorder, even a smart speaker without a screen, all apparently targeted for late 2026. They want to own the physical gateway to their AI.
Trying to bypass phones, maybe? Meanwhile, Meta's already playing this game.
They are. They just unveiled their $799 Meta Ray-Ban display smart glasses.
With a built-in screen this time.
A little screen on the right lens, yeah, for alerts. But the really critical piece is how you control them. With the Meta Neural Band.
The wristband thing, what does it do?
It's a wristband that uses electromyography, EMG. It reads the tiny electrical signals from muscle movements in your wrist.
So you control the glasses with subtle hand gestures. No tapping or voice needed.
Exactly. It's a huge step towards seamless, almost subconscious, on-device interaction. Very futuristic.
And then there's Apple, making a big shift.
A potentially massive philosophical shift, yeah. They're reportedly planning their first ever touchscreen OLED MacBook Pro for late 2026 as well.
A touchscreen Mac. But Steve Jobs famously hated vertical touchscreens.
He did. Back in 2010, he was strongly against it. So this marks a major departure. It suggests even Apple recognizes that an AI-heavy interactive future needs that physical touch layer on bigger screens, too.
Okay, second front, the actual chips. Geopolitics are flaring up here.
Definitely. China drew a line in the sand. Beijing ordered major Chinese tech firms ByteDance, Alibaba included, to stop buying or even testing NVIDIA's RTX Pro 6000D chips.
Why those specific chips?
They're powerful, but may be seen as something China feels its domestic alternatives can now handle. It's a clear signal. Accelerate the push for self-sufficient, homegrown AI processors. We don't need these anymore.
NVIDIA's response.
Fascinating move. NVIDIA turned around and invested $5 billion in its old rival, Intel.
NVIDIA investing in Intel, why?
To co-develop custom x86 CPUs and these new things called x86 RTX OCs.
Okay, break that down. x86 RTX OC.
Okay, so x86 is Intel's traditional CPU architecture. RTX is NVIDIA's powerful GPU tech. And Sol System, on a chip, puts them both onto a single piece of silicon.
Ah, an integrated chip with both Intel CPU and NVIDIA GPU.
Exactly. Connected using NVIDIA's own high-speed NVLink interface. It's NVIDIA hedging its bets, partnering with a major U.S. manufacturer, Intel, to build really powerful custom integrated hardware for the future, locking things in.
And they're securing the scaling tech, too, this Infabrica deal.
Right. $900 million, mostly an acqui-hire. Getting key people and, crucially, interconnect technology from Infabrica.
Why is that tech so important?
Because it's vital for wiring up massive data centers, connecting, like, over 100,000 GPUs into one single giant network.
For the huge AI models.
For the truly enormous scale AI training. NVIDIA is making sure they have the talent and the tech to keep pushing that computing power up into the exaflop range and beyond.
Okay, third front then. Let's wrap up with the ecosystem battleground. Content, regulation, governance.
Yeah, and the fight over content compensation is really getting intense. Driven by what people are calling the AI paradox.
The AI paradox. Explain that.
Simple terms. AI needs vast amounts of content to learn news articles, user posts, research papers, everything.
Right, training data.
But when the AI then summarizes that content nicely for a user in, say, an AI overview.
The user doesn't need to click the original link anymore.
Exactly. It kills the click-through traffic, which guts the advertising revenue for the original creator.
Mm-hmm.
That's the paradox.
Yeah.
AI needs the content, but undermines its business model.
A fundamental challenge to the digital economy.
Pretty much. And we see that playing out right now with Reddit.
What are they doing?
They're renegotiating their AI data deal with Google. They don't want a flat fee anymore. They're pushing for dynamic pricing.
Meaning
the price Google pays should depend on the actual value Reddit's user content provides to the AI's answers in real time. They want to monetize the data's direct contribution.
Trying to capture the value AI extracts.
And that's why we're seeing lawsuits, too. Penske Media, they publish Rolling Stone, Variety.
Right.
They're suing Google, arguing that using their copyrighted articles for AI summaries is illegal, that it directly cannibalizes their search traffic and hurts their subscription business.
So this is a fight over who owns and profits from information in the AI age.
Fundamentally, yes. Who captures the economic value?
Now, on the safety side, we saw two really different approaches this week.
Yeah, polar opposites almost.
Yeah.
OpenAI rolled out new controls for teenage ChatGPT users.
What kind of controls?
Things like automatic age detection, restricted versions of the assistant, parental controls like account linking, even notifications if the AI detects distress.
That's quite protective.
The CEO explicitly said they're prioritizing safety over privacy and freedom for minors in this case. A clear choice.
Okay, and the contrast, Anthropic.
Anthropic took a very firm stance on ethical restrictions. They refused to let U.S. federal contractors, FBI, Secret Service, ICE, were mentioned, use their AI models for surveillance of U.S. citizens.
Really? They turned down government contracts?
Based on their usage policy, yeah. It apparently frustrated officials who found the policy wording a bit vague, but Anthropic held the line. It shows some AI companies are willing to forego potentially lucrative deals based on ethical grounds.
That's significant. Okay, finally. The ultimate autonomous agent. An AI in government.
It sounds wild, but yeah. Albania appointed Diela, which is a virtual entity, an AI bot to its council of ministers.
An AI minister? What does it, or she?
Do, it suppose. Diela's job is to oversee public procurement decisions. Billions in government spending.
Why use an AI for that?
The state goal is transparency and anti-corruption, to ensure public tenders are completely free of corruption by using AI models to check criteria, verify compliance, make unbiased recommendations.
So I have to ask, does Minister Diela get, like, a government pension? Does it attend meetings via hologram?
Huh. Probably needs a human proxy for the meetings. But seriously, the symbolic weight is huge. It's a demonstration of extreme transparency. Using this virtual entity is a key part of supporting Albania's bid to join the European Union, showing they're using tech for integrity, not just efficiency.
Wow. No, okay, so let's try and tie this all together.
Yeah.
We've gone way past simple predictive AI.
Way past.
We're talking powerful generative agents now. They need secure financial rails, like AP2. They're causing huge job shifts. That 30% cut at Fiverr is stark.
Mm-hmm.
And they're literally designing new life with that Evo virus breakthrough.
And the thread connecting all of this, I think the most compelling narrative, is this escalating war over the user experience. And tied to that, the battle for data sovereignty.
Data sovereignty, meaning who controls your data.
And where the intelligence lives.
Mm.
Is our future going to be dominated by a central cloud-based AI like Google and Meta are building?
Yeah.
Where you're always connected, always sharing data. Versus a secure, maybe more private, on-device intelligence model, which has traditionally been Apple's strength.
Right.
Keeping more processing local, that's the fundamental tension defining the next chapter of tech and personal agency.
And we see AI getting perfect scores in coding contests, spending 7 hours solving problems alone.
Yeah.
If AI becomes the expert coder, the biologist designing life, even the incorruptible government minister, what's left? What new, uniquely human skill will we need to master next?
That is the question, isn't it? Something definitely worth thinking about as you reflect on this week's deep dive.